Hey everyone, welcome back to the Art Scene Podcast. You're listening to episode 15. This week's guest is Bay Area artist Elizabeth Itai. Like myself, Elizabeth is also an SFAI grad, but graduated a year before I did. And funny enough, our paths never crossed. But fortunately, we met through a mutual friend, and I was able to convince her to come onto the podcast, talk about her personal experience growing up in Eastern and Western Europe, her beginnings as a photographer, and ultimately her art practice as a whole. But before we go into our conversation, I just want to remind everybody to be sure to leave a comment on iTunes, because the more comments the podcast gets, the more visibility it gets. Okay, enough self-promotion for now. On to my conversation with Elizabeth. How are you doing? Thanks for coming to the Academy.
Thanks for having me here.
You're the very first person that I have to come to the Academy, which I'm excited about, because I need alternative places instead of my living room.
It's a nice place to be.
Yeah, I know. It's a nice building. It is, yeah. Especially after a Friday. It's pretty quiet. So I learned about you from Clea. Clea had mentioned that you went to SFAI. We overlapped by a year. I think you graduated in 2013, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I graduated in 2014, so we graduated. We missed each other by a year.
And we never met.
Right.
Epic.
Right. And you knew people that was in my program, so that was surprising. When did you first move to San Francisco? Well, actually, you know what? Let me ask you, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Romania, Transylvania.
Okay. And when did you move to San Francisco?
2011.
2011. Mm-hmm. Oh, so not too long ago.
No, it's my sixth year now.
Yeah. And what made you move to San Francisco?
Study. I wanted to do my MFA. I realized I wanted to do art. I always wanted to study art.
Yeah.
And then I researched Germany, but they weren't that far ahead with their MFA programs.
Really?
Yeah. So they told me I went to the Academy of Düsseldorf Academy, Kunstakademie. Mm-hmm. And I called them and they said, well, yeah, maybe we will set up the program in 2 years. And I'm like, wow, okay, that's a little bit long.
Right.
So I thought, okay, fine. So I researched European universities. Mm-hmm. And since I've been living in so many countries in Europe, at some point I realized, no, I need to get out of here. Mm-hmm. So I thought, yeah, let's go and see what's going on in America.
What kind of education did you have in Romania? Like, what did you study first?
Oh, I went to elementary school.
Okay.
It was under Ceausescu, so.
No, I mean, like, basic. Okay, well, let's talk about that. How was growing up in Romania? Start there.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Which sounds odd, I know. But I had a really, really beautiful childhood. I'm a twin, so sometimes I say we. So, yeah, we had a great, great childhood. And given the fact what was going on, you know, the adults had a harder life. But I think when you're a child, you absorb things more easily. So school was hard. I was left-handed. Mm-hmm. I was very strict.
Is that a big thing, like not to be left-handed?
Yeah, back then it was.
Okay.
And then, you know, I just realized how we got a really good education at school there, mm-hmm. but we only realized once we got to Germany, because they were introducing us in fourth grade to the Roman numbers. I'm like, we got that last year. So, second grade Romania.
Wow.
So there were good and bad things for the... I mean, the system was going down by 85, and we had food tickets and all that. But my mom was a doctor, so it was a little bit like... You know, she worked at the countryside, so it was more a lot more barter based society than in the richer Western cultures or countries.
Right, and explain to me, I guess, so that way our audience can have a better understanding of what was going on in Romania and Eastern Europe around the time.
Oh, well,
obviously the Cold War, right?
Yeah, an Iron Curtain. Mm-hmm. So Romania was under Ceausescu, mm-hmm. who developed into a dictator. Mm-hmm. And, there was little freedom. But again, you know, I learned by going to the West. And I practically grew up between East and West, and we would go every year home. And, you know, on the highway from... I compare it to time travels.
Yeah.
Because Romania was somewhere maybe in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. 1950s, 1960s, maybe not even.
Think you mean like culturally and technologically, you mean? Or you
more technologically. Maybe, yeah, culturally as well, because it was gray. The East was gray on the outside. Mm-hmm. And then in the West, I remember when we arrived in the West, I was almost stoned. Mm-hmm. I was running around. I was nine. I was like, oh, my God, I could smell the supermarket. Everything had a smell to it, you know, even the packaging. Mm-hmm. And it was intense.
Where in the West did you move to?
Trier.
Okay, and where's
it's
that?
The oldest town in Germany. It used to be the Western Empire of the Western capital of the Roman Empire.
Oh, wow.
So it's close to the border of Luxembourg, France, Belgium.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's where we moved. And then...
How old were you when that move happened?
Nine. And then yeah, we started school there. And then I realized that we were a little bit further, especially mathematics and everything.
Where'd your parents see? You mentioned your mother was a doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. And your father?
Opera singer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the arts are in...
Deep bass.
They do that professionally? Like,
yeah,
like
he was a solo,
off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that part of the reason why you guys moved to the West?
No, I think better life. Like
better
many
life.
People, you know, no one could know back then that the wall would come down.
Right. So then, was arts always something in your life?
Yes, definitely. Because my aunt used to, she would play the piano. Mm-hmm. So I grew up with a lot of piano. I love the piano.
Right.
Probably because of that.
Right.
It's the only instrument that can make me cry. And then, yeah, my sister and I, we were three, and my dad, him singing at the opera. The kids would come in, and they would be statistics, like extras.
Oh, really?
And for children's, you know, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
And it shows, like...
Yeah, so we were the last two of the Seven Dwarfs, because we were so young. Mm-hmm. So we just had to walk across the stage twice, and we was like, whoa! And then once the curtain came down, and the two of us, we just stood in front of the curtain holding hands, and we was so mesmerized, and we didn't get it that Snow White and the Five Dwarfs just went in again.
Yeah.
So Snow White had to come out and get us. And the applause. So yeah, that was my first stage experience.
When did you start making art for yourself?
And more seriously?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was... Well, I always drew and painted a lot during high school. And then I wanted to become a dancer first, ballerina. And then I switched back to doctor. And then I got lost once I graduated. I'm like, oh, what should I do? So I decided I go to Hungary after high school. And we always passed Budapest, you know, on our travels. And sometimes it was in the morning, 6 a.m. or at night. And that city always had such a magic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the dense history and, you know, it was, yeah, and its beauty, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I decided I moved to Budapest, also because I was barely able to speak Hungarian. I almost forgot all the language. So I moved there, and then my self-imposed theory was that if I go into the foreign, I don't earn one, I will start something that will come out of myself, and that will be me. So, that's where I got back into dance. I did modern dance. And I drew every day for two years. I went, that was really amazing back then. It was from 98 to 2000.
Yeah.
And Hungary was in this in-between state because the curtain came down 87.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it takes the transitional state period. Yeah. Took a long time, and they were in that transitional period where there was a lot of excitement for the West, and the East hasn't yet disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved it. There was a lot of subculture. A lot of drawing courses, you know, in artist living rooms. I worked a lot with Kopos Tomas. He's an artist there who had a studio in his house. And that back then, artists would be funded by the state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was good.
So then what did you decide to... I guess, where did you go to undergrad then?
I did the diploma. I didn't do undergrad. Back then, there was no undergrad. And
upper
grad was... Whatever. I did. So I applied. First, I thought I'm studying art.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a portfolio. I did that in Hungary. I did a design portfolio and a painting and photography.
Okay.
And then I went one, it was one of these ad hoc decisions with a friend. We're like, yeah, let's apply for Vienna Art School. So I threw together a portfolio, you know, 24 hours. And they didn't take us, but we had a great day in Vienna. So, and then I wanted to study in Hungary, but it was too expensive for me as a foreigner. So I decided, okay, I go back to Germany. And my parents wanted me to be safe, and they said I should study, you know, design. So I applied for photography at FH Dortmund, in Dortmund, and a couple other schools, but Dortmund took me. And then I studied communications design with emphasis photography, so I did a diploma with a sick 5 years.
And what did you do afterwards?
Afterwards, I worked as a photographer.
Oh, really? For like an advertising company?
Yeah, more freelance. Was always very, I mean, I really loved the education in Dortmund because we got a very profound technical knowledge. Mm-hmm. And but being from a country, you know, that was built on huge propaganda. Mm-hmm. I always had my problems with advertising, mm-hmm. and I just could never combine it in my brain and really justify it. Though there is really amazing advertising, I don't mean to, you know, devilize anything here. Mm-hmm. But it's just my personal standpoint.
Of course, yeah.
That I think you have to be cautious. So I never did that. Like fully.
So what kind of freelance work were you doing?
Freelance graphic design. I worked for a company. They did some online. It was an online shop. And I started teaching Pilates before I came. Oh, I did translations for the European Union. I worked for a company, research like law things. I had a lot of jobs, and each job is a challenge to me.
Well, how long were you doing that type of work until you decided to go back and you wanted to go back to school and get your MFA?
4 years.
4 years?
4 years, I guess. Yeah, four, maybe three.
Yeah, so you just did all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah, I did a lot. I did for many, many years jewelry as well.
Oh, wow.
I loved that. In Trier, actually, with my sister. Mm-hmm. Today she's big, Conplot. Yeah. So, but always art. I'm getting bored quickly. Maybe it's part of my creativity, I don't know, but then I have to switch and move on.
Right, like you
continue.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you decide to go to San Francisco, right?
Well, I applied for three schools. I applied for SVA, SAIC, and SFAI.
Okay.
And they all took me, but SFAI gave me the fellowship, which was amazing.
Okay.
And then I said, okay, let's go to SFAI.
Have you ever been to San Francisco beforehand?
No.
Have you been to the United States beforehand?
Yeah. New York and Detroit.
Okay. Wow, so, those are two vast different cities to visit.
Yeah. Which was good because I got the whole width.
Yeah, totally. You got the Midwest culture and the East Coast culture. Yeah,
yeah.
And now you have West Coast culture.
Right, which was crazy. Yeah, and then I arrived here, and like 3 months into my stay, I realized, oh my God, you always wanted to come to San Francisco. But that was a dream when I was 10. Mm-hmm. And we had in Trier back then, we had the French army stationed downtown, mm-hmm. and then a lot of American bases. So I went to bilingual school where I did my baccalaureate. Mm-hmm. Bilingual. We had a lot of exchange with American students. So American culture was always really close there, but still foreign. We had to write these letters to the students, and we were all 10, 11.
Yeah.
And then these letters would come back from the Americans, and
So you did pen pals?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, exactly. We did pen pals before actually meeting.
Really?
And then we were able to pick, you know, who we want to meet based on our pen palship.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, all of us received these letters, and, I mean, I'm talking now for myself, but so, oh, hey, hi, Lissy, I love you. It's so great. I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean you love me? You haven't even met me. So that was very strange. But then we met, yeah, and it was a good exchange always.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
So then, so now you start SFAI.
Yeah.
And when you go in, you go in as a photography, are you focused on photography?
I applied with photography. I mean, I applied for the photography department. That's what I got in. But I wanted to continue photography, but I think I was in a crisis.
Why you say that?
I hated photography for many years. I'm kind of friending myself again. Because I started off with, back in Budapest and also, mainly there, I started off with, hands-on, black and white lab, and then Dortmund was a lot of color lab, color, hands-on development, all that stuff. It just didn't make sense because it was like hand developing like a... What, the perfume bottle?
Oh, really?
It's like I'm wasting fucking paper. But it's okay. You had to learn it, It was great. But, yeah, so this hands-on and then digitalism arrived. And I think I made a body of work which was about traveling, and it was about this speeding up the society.
Yeah, because I was looking at your work, and I saw that your earlier work... Well, early work, there's a series where you did some drawings, but then, and then at the same time, you were doing these very documentary type of work.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I think that's how I started taking photographs.
Just documentary,
documenting the travels to Romania.
Right. And why did that interest you so much?
Why? Mm-hmm. Because it was something I could not get... That I was constantly losing it every year, because I grew up between these two countries. So I grew up with two homes, but the old home, I think I tried, I wanted to capture the old home, and that was vanishing or so quickly changing. And so that's how I started, and I had my little Canon A1 film.
Yeah,
and then... But in Dortmund, when I finished, I realized I need to do some work that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I decided I'm doing this kind of social study documentary, and I went back to Romania to my birth time, Cluj. And that was a challenge because I stayed there a month, and I picked 12 people from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. social backgrounds and ages, and I interviewed them with 7 questions each.
Oh, wow.
In Hungarian and in Romanian.
Mm-hmm.
And these questions were all about the West, because I shot, and recorded them in 2005, and then they were enacted to the European Union in 2007. So it was a lot of questions about the past, how the past was, and how they see the future, what they expect from the West, what was better, mm-hmm. what's worse now. And it was very interesting to hear, because the older generation, sometimes you get into this melancholic mm-hmm. state of, everything was better, zuma zumarum, not everything was great, but there were great aspects of communism or the idea of communism. And for example, one person was saying that there was such an equality, but people were so unsatisfied with it, because whether you were a worker or a doctor, you would earn the same.
Right.
Or maybe you would earn a little bit. Of course, I think you earn more. You earn more, but you couldn't buy different goods.
Wow.
So you had maybe, I'm making this up, but maybe you had 5 different types of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So that you were limited in the expression of yourself via, via items.
Right. Whatever material things you could purchase with the money you were making, didn't really differ.
No.
Right.
Food wasn't existent.
Right.
From some point. But, car. But on the other hand, you couldn't travel, But then you were able to travel every 2 years.
And this is like by law, you're saying,
to the foreign.
Oh, wow!
And then only in the demo,
like whoever had a treaty or an agreement with the country, right?
Or when they got enacted, then that all changed, because then people would say, now you can have everything, but now you need the money. Or you can't travel, you have freedom, you have so much freedom, you don't even know what to do with it. But if you don't have the money, you might be even further tied down than back then.
Right.
And plus you had a safety back then, which you don't have in capitalist societies. Especially not in the U.S., but back then you came out of school, you had a place to study, it didn't cost you anything, you had to do your exams, you studied, you got off school, you got your job, mm-hmm. assigned somewhere in the country, you went there, you work, you were able to buy an apartment, a car. You were kind of sad, more or less.
Wow.
And but then also, I'm pulling all this from the interviews and what people told me.
Yeah, yeah. This is stuff you're learning just by meeting people and documenting.
Yeah, because I was really interested because I was growing up between these two worlds. And when I arrived first in Germany, I mean, Romania wasn't the chicest country to be from, mm-hmm. you know. If we had arrived from the U.S., it would have been way fancier.
Right.
So I grew up with that paradox, and then all of us, you know, right now it's shifting, which is great. I mean, things always shift, and there's, yeah.
Wow.
So I wanted to know more about how it was, because I was so small, tiny, and I was so happy there.
And how long did that type of project last for you? Like, did that carry on into your studies at SFAI?
I think so, yeah. I think that, it definitely left an impact on me.
Right.
Partly because of my personal story, and then also what those people told me. And the young people were all looking forward to the West, and they were just really thrilled of having like fancy posters up and advertising and freedom of speech, which is, you know, I mean, it's great, and there are always great aspects about change. But then coming to the U.S., I realized, oh my God, this I grew up with the idea of the West, and I think part of me wanting to come to San Francisco was, this is the West of the West. If you go for the West, right. You land in the East again.
Yeah.
And then I didn't know where I am. I had sometimes flashbacks of being in Romania because of these cables.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have that in Germany. You don't have it in Northern Europe. Everything's underground. So then I had a cultural shock, for sure, even though I came from the West and went to the West. But there were so many subtle differences, mm-hmm. which you only learn about a culture when you live in. Mm-hmm. And you would never get as a tourist, or I don't even think in half a year.
How did your work change? Really dark, really?
But I started already getting dark in Germany when I left. I'm like, something's not right?
In what ways was it getting dark?
I think, just dark, like really dark. Maybe it's also me coming from Transylvania. There's some darkness to it.
Like emotionally, like it's
yeah.
work, right?
And I realized, you know, because we left, or many people left, and there was this enthusiasm about the West back then, mm-hmm. and these idealistic ideas that we would be confronted with also while traveling, or me while living in Hungary. Mm-hmm. You know, people really thought that you do not have to work much in the West. And there is a certain standard, which was definitely higher, but people do work for it.
Right.
But that consciousness, if you live in a society that does not, where it doesn't matter whether you work or not because you have the same standard,
yeah.
then you're just in a different pattern.
Right.
Let's put it that way. I just realized that something's decaying, falling apart.
You talk about yourself?
No. No. I'm talking about maybe it's a dream or facing reality that those years were over, especially those golden years. Now all my friends around me, they were all hassling. But, you know, but then you go to the East and they all think you're doing great. But then you go to the West and you're like, no one's really great. I mean, it's a fight.
Right. And so you're realizing basically like this, the West, this thing, this place you idolize and wish to dream to go to. Now that you're there, you're kind of, are you like now finding out that it's not as, like whatever the high expectation that you had, what it was going to be isn't, like it's not that it's a bad place, but it's not as great as you thought it was going to be when you moved there, and then going back to the East, you're realizing you also happen to miss a little bit of that as well, and you're kind of in this between. What's the internal conflict that you're having between the East and West, I guess?
I don't think, it's not a conflict, to me it's just a paradox.
Okay.
It's a paradox of what I said, in the East, people thought that the West was golden and great, but
right. If
you're in the West, you know it's not.
Right.
And then I came here and I realized, oh, hell yeah, it's definitely not.
Right. You talk about San Francisco.
Yeah. Or just the U.S. It's just that paradox of me growing up.
Well, all right. So then let's go back to, so let's say you're in school.
Yeah.
You just finished basically coming off of creating this series where you're documenting people from the East, mm-hmm. and you're interviewing them. You're learning about what they idolize about the West, what they're interested in mm-hmm. the West, but then also at the same time, just in general about their lives mm-hmm. At that moment. So now you're at SFAI. Are you wanting to continue that type of work, but here in San Francisco, where you're interviewing and documenting people, or when you went to SFAI, you wanted to do something different with your photography?
Yeah, different. I have to add that after this documentary, I did this body of work about a space,
right.
time, and photography, where I did several works where I would travel
okay.
by different means, like train and car.
Inside the United States?
No, in Europe.
Oh, in Europe, okay.
And I just created these visuals. I always had a second exposure time. I realized that's kind of where I'm comfortable, mm-hmm. like a little less than a second.
Yeah. Yeah, is that the... what was it called? Space Continuum?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly. Doing,
where it's
yeah.
like streaks and you're like, it's just like things moving, yeah, right? Like yeah. you're documenting?
Yeah, I was documenting and kind of analyzing how we see, because in a highway it's more like this counter movement.
Right.
And then you have, when you're on train, it's more meditative. Right. And the speeding up, I read a lot of books about where we're developing and about the speed advancement and how with this speed also things fall apart or fall away that we're used to. So it was interesting in that.
Okay.
Especially also, I think, because when I drove first Autobahn, I threw up.
Right.
I couldn't take the speed.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Like, it was horrible.
So then obviously you're switching over to, like, space. Like, you did the space and light and... basically,
yeah.
it seems like your work was shifting from documenting people to now you're documenting like space and
the movement
of people. Okay.
Yeah.
And where did your work go from there then?
So I came here and I wanted to, my idea was first to analyze notions of home.
Okay.
Because it's in America, what I find exciting, it's interesting, you always say home is where your heart is.
Right.
In Europe, it's home is where you're born.
Okay.
You know, it's so bound to soul, the notion of home. Mm-hmm. But I quickly let it go within my cultural shock and whatnot. And I had started these photographs of Kinungagap, what was part of my final work, and I didn't know what to do with it. And I realized there is such an ambiguity to those images, and they're so painful but powerful, and they could be yawning and release. And I went into that work, and while doing that, I thought of getting photography into more installational space of this 2D, you know, flatness, which sometimes still bothers me. And at the same time, I wanted to get back to my handwork, to drawing. So I did a lot of classes that had nothing to do with photography. I think maybe I took 2 photo classes.
Mm-hmm. So you were starting to get conceptual with your photographic work and not just traditionally like a print. You wanted to be a little bit more creative with how you were using photography and not only photography, but art forms.
Yeah, I wanted to definitely expand again and bring back the physicality, whether that's now in photography or in drawing, what am I now doing, sculptures. So that was important to me. And then I did this work and I started photographing the moons. I realized there is so much comfort in this consistency of light and nature and also darkness. And I believe I regard myself as an analog native.
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about digital natives, but what about us?
Why is it that? Because
I didn't grow up with the internet. For me, still, I'm getting better, but you know, sometimes just, oh, haven't you looked at on Wikipedia? I'm like, no. Duh. That's right. So I'm still in books. I still read books and make marks and notes. And I like one-on-one. I think society is changing. It's more the younger brains are more flexible. Mm-hmm. They adapt faster to this analog and virtual reality, whereas I am still exhausted by it. and it's getting too much. Mm-hmm. And I read all these. I read this book. I mean, I read a lot of books while at SFA, and why realizing how much technology here is more advanced than in Europe, because mm-hmm. it, you know, it always takes a couple of years to get over overseas. I read a lot of books on communication and technology and how it affects us. And Sherry Turkle, I really love her work and her long-term studies. And yeah, that book had a huge impact on me, Alone Together, and how empathy is actually declining and how we get used to
the texting.
To text, and especially young people. You
sure,
know,
everything's on your phone now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And sometimes I even had people telling me, like, I don't want to talk on the phone because I hate my voice. And then I would say, well, but it's not, I mean, you don't hear yourself. I hear right. you, and I love it.
Right, yeah.
I love the human voice, and I think there is so much lost always in whether it's email, it's all, you know, we're so rich as humans. So I thought, why not using darkness as something meditative? Because mm-hmm. in general, it's always so, it's, has more negative connotation, you know,
right.
things are dark. But I love it, and I grew up with a lot of darkness. I mean, streetlights would go out off at 11, you know, back then, and it was nice. You had quiet. It was more nature, closer to nature.
Yeah.
And we lived in a city. It sounds like countryside, but it was not.
No, it's just a different culture.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So, and then I expanded on that and working with the moon and using that as
it's a beautiful series. Like I saw that. Yeah, I really love it. It looks like a time lapse, but I mean, it really. Did you do all that work digitally, or did you do that in the dark room?
Digitally.
Yeah.
I love to expand with the dark room. Hopefully, Reiko will still exist.
Yeah.
But I did it digitally. I did the Moon ABC.
Explain a little bit Reiko so that way the audience.
Oh, it's just a photo center, which is like a little dinosaur in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any comparable. Well, yeah, you have everything at Reiko Darkroom and Color Darkroom and Studio. It's just one of these very traditional spaces where you still can work analog. Or digital.
So finding that you're still liking digital work?
Yeah, I learned to use it for my needs. I realize I do very different work. Uh-huh. I shoot differently. Maybe I'm getting used to it, but for example, the Moon ABC I did
mm-hmm.
was the moonlight. It took me so much time just to get like the O, like a perfect circle with your hand without seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, doing that analog would have cost me, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred. So, yeah, it's good to go with technology, but some people adapt faster and some slower, and it took me a while. And now I do digital only. I don't have the patience.
Wow.
And there's also no time for it. I still have negatives. I think when I'm 60 or 70,
yeah.
I just lean back and scan all those things.
Yeah.
And then I have to distance as well. You need to, you know, to process and see what you've done. Sometimes I do things and it takes me years to get back to them because my brain is... My eyes faster than my brain. I don't know.
Well, I also noticed that you started also doing more video work.
Yeah.
So you transitioned, but you're starting to explore video work.
Yeah.
Why explain that? What got you interested in doing more and doing video work?
So reading all these things about, you know, empathy and all and the technological culture, I really hassled with how to. I mean, how do you transport? How do you communicate something where it's about empathy or it's about you want the viewer to retreat
mm-hmm.
and listen? So I thought I realized for myself when I did my Moon ABC, it took me a long time. I realized, okay, now I have to write with it.
Right.
How do I write with it best? And for now, I figured that was the best I could do for myself where I was satisfied. So that was the stop motion video.
You know, so one of the things I noticed just by looking at your whole mm-hmm. body of work, right? Mm-hmm. And you in these this evolution or not evolution, I guess progression of,
yeah.
Yeah, of your work. It's very obvious to me. When I look through it, I can mm-hmm. see, like, the way you're describing it is exactly how see it visually.
So I'm in sync with myself.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, because, you know, because that's exactly what I... When I saw your work online and I tried to look at it from as far back as possible mm-hmm. and try to see your progression mm-hmm. and how your work changed and mm-hmm. and how you're describing it to me, how you're describing your experiences that you're going through from moving from Europe to San Francisco and to even to today... What your interests are now, mm-hmm. and your focuses are, mm-hmm. it matches up. And but I noticed in the stuff that you've done in the last 3 years, you have some work where you're addressing commercialism and capitalism, mm-hmm. Obviously Western ideals, right?
Yeah.
That are influencing society. What's your commentary on that? Like, why is that such a focus as well? Because it seems like describing like the Moon series, mm-hmm. right? Totally. I mean, you're not doing that with that series. You're addressing something else that has mm-hmm. to do more with darkness and light, emotionally what you're dealing with, but. This other work, you are making a commentary. And actually, you know, now you mentioned to me that you studied design.
Mm-hmm.
I see a little bit of that in the series that you did on that. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I get back to it. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think I do it because I'm observing it
mm-hmm.
and I read about it. And the way I work, it's important for me to comment on that.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important for you to comment on that?
Because I think advertising can have a really deep impact on people.
Okay.
And the way it changes, I find it very... Some of it is great, as said, and there is definitely good stuff happening. But I did this slogan poem back in 2011 with, you know, repetitive things. Where I collected slogans because it has this... It's, again, the emotional level that can impact you, you know, and create desires that you're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're good, sometimes not. But I like to turn it around and think, okay, oh yeah, you're promising me paradise. Well, let's see, what is my paradise?
Oh, I see.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't need your paradise. We're so drawn into this product and you need to have the latest, le dernier cri. But you don't.
Like the imposition of them telling you,
yeah,
this is something you should do or believe in. So that bothers you a little bit.
Yeah, it stresses me sometimes. I don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I grew up in Romania, the way I see it for me and how it makes sense to me, yeah, we really didn't have much,
mm-hmm.
right? But people were so creative. You know, you would build your own chicken shed and garden and whatnot. People would invent things from the inside because you had to do it because there was little outside.
Right.
Today it's the opposite. We have a lot outside, and then there's you have to counterbalance to allow the inside to come out. If I watch every day five hours like video games, where's my own creativity? And it's just about feeding and being fed.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to step back, and I think that's why I did this dark series, because I wanted people to take back themselves and go back inward, and then nothing can touch you, and there is no frustration about
it. Right. Do you feel, since you've moved out here to San Francisco, that there's more of that here compared to what you experienced in terms of slogans and advertisement and what you mentioned earlier, propaganda? Do you feel that there's more of that here in San Francisco than
Western
where you're
Europe? No.
Western Europe, or is it kind of the same?
It's the same. I mean, there are even Black Fridays now, I think, in Germany.
Oh, really?
But I haven't been
to
one.
Made it that far, huh?
I think so. I would need to double check that. But so Black Friday, I mean, that's epic.
Yeah.
And just the fact that people go on the streets after holy day,
right?
So to say,
right? Because I feel like Christ holidays aren't as commercialized as they become here in the United States, but in Europe, they're not. They're actually more associated with religious holidays and more holy and more traditional.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not religious,
right?
And if people want to be, please, they are. So I mean, yeah, for so the like, religious people, it's great in Europe, but In Germany, I can relate to that best. But yeah, stores are closed. It's not always great, but it's, I think it's somewhere always in the middle. We could really learn a lot from each other, from systems, and see, okay, this worked out well there,
right.
And then we just embed it into ours.
Right. But the fact that because traditionally Western Europe, it doesn't really. Because there are these traditional ideals where, like, stores have to still close after a holy holiday or whatever.
Yeah, 2 days.
It sticks out more of a sore thumb when some American tradition makes it out there and starts to be practiced.
And it actually gives people the chance to be with themselves or with each other, because you can't go out and lose yourself in...
No, I agree. Like, I mean, my brother is really into Black Friday. Never growing up were we into that. My family was never one to go out to the stores. We stayed inside and we went to church. My parents were Catholic, but as we were older and were adults, my brother decided that he loved the deals.
Okay.
And I think one year, me and my fiance were with my family, and he said, "Let's go to Black Friday," and we'd never done it before. I'm like, "All right, sure."
Where did you go?
We went to like Best Buy.
Oh my god!
And it was crazy. I was tired because it's like 1 in the morning. I was half asleep, like sleepwalking, basically in the store, but insanely amazed of like. The amount of one that there was, by the way, there were amazing deals. But
totally. That was true.
So that was confirmed.
Yeah.
But I was amazed of how many people were out and about
at
1 a.m. It bothered me because I was like, I'd rather just be at home watching TV with my family and going to sleep.
Yeah.
I maybe bought like one or two things, but it wasn't worth...
If you get them.
Right, if I get them, and it wasn't worth being up that late.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and even now I still don't understand the fanaticism of wanting to wake up that early and being out that late to get the deals.
It's not in my blood either, so...
It's
maybe this hunter, you know, to hunt stuff down.
Maybe, yeah.
And get the deal, be the winner, bring it back home.
Right.
And install it.
Yeah.
Or not, you know, use it. I mean, there's a lot about hunting in that.
Yeah.
All that.
So, you mentioned earlier, and I wanted... This was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, but I wanted to go a little bit more in depth about it. You mentioned how easily bored you can get, right? Like, you want to, like, change it up a little bit, especially with your work. That was definitely something I noticed in a lot of your work. All very different. Like, they're all the different topics. There's some relations with each other, but for the most part, they're very different. Mm-hmm. And do you... see your work continuing to do that? Like, you may, like, whatever the latest series that you did, do you see, like, the next series being something completely different, a new idea that you're interested in?
No, so the way I see my work, I have these different directions, but I return to them continuously.
So you like coming back?
And I add to them. Right now, I mean, I did another photographic series, which I see part of these darker works where I use the darkness. My next work, I'm working something sculptures, which some people are really creeped out by it and some love them, which is excellent. I have so many ideas. I wish I had the time to have them all out. And I can work on an idea long enough, but then I need to take a break and then I research again and go back. And while I'm doing that, I'm working on the other thing.
Right.
And also, I like to engage my body, maybe because I come from a lot of dance and whatnot. So I can't work like 50 hours at the computer one thing. And I think you need to take breaks when you're working on something.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
To think about what you're actually doing and to distance yourself and to look at it and see if it makes sense. or if you can add or not. And then while I'm doing that, I have this other idea that's going on somewhere else. So I'm just...
So you like to take long... You're not one that's constantly making work back to back. You like to take work on a project and then take a break for a little while and then think about what else
you
want to do.
Yeah, I'm really slow with everything.
Well, because I noticed there's a gap in, like, you made work, you presented and exhibited work in 2014... Mm-hmm. And 16, which is past year, mm-hmm. but there's a gap in 2015. Yeah. So was that you taking a break or?
Yeah, and also taking a break from visa.
Oh, okay. So,
I mean, you know, that was so, it was physically and mentally so draining.
And what was happening at that time that with your visa, like the internet?
I just had to recover and live a little because it was, you know, when you apply for the visa.
It's like, just a lot, it's amount, like a lot of work.
Yeah, this artist visa, and you have to reach out to these many people to support you. And it's so, that's another thing in the U.S. People are so supportive. I received so much support here, like never in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm really thankful for that. But you have to ask. And in Europe, people usually come, but then few come. It was still draining, and it just, you know, letting down your guard and being like, hey, I really need this, and can you support me? But I got it, but I had to recover, and I had to live a little. And also I was thinking, okay, where to go next? Because I was really in drive, and when I did that East Meets West, Ramon's Taylor, I was ready to continue and work, but then I got put on hold.
Yeah.
I had to justify my status, mm-hmm. or to justify, but verify.
You had to focus your shift on working, or getting this visa approved again, or updated, I guess.
And I had to prove my whole artistic being from... So it took a lot of time to just get that. So that's why 2015 was...
Penumbral States is the... Penumbral States. Penumbral States is the latest show you did at Alter Space, right? That one I noticed was a lot more installation, am I right?
Yeah. It was in a people gallery at Alter Space.
Yeah, it was installation, more installation type work, right? Was that your first foray into that type of work?
No, I did that. That was my second.
Is that your second one?
Yeah, that was my second WC installation. The first one I did at Ramon's Taylor was Babel, the Sound Cloud.
Okay.
Where I recorded Kant's Categorical Imperative in 60 languages.
Oh, wow.
And then I had this cloud, and it would just, you know, you could just immerse in it. And I really came to love toilets. Restroom.
Oh, right. I saw that with the cloud.
Yeah. So that was my first restroom, and then Alter Space the second. And I think these spaces are amazing because you have solitude, which I think I love. And this work was very much about solitude, but in the most positive sense. So that's why you know you have solitude, you let go.
Right.
You're by yourself, and then you do ingest.
So then, so what else do you have coming up then? Do you have anything that you foresee happening in the next year, in 2017? Like any new show coming up or any work you're working on right now that you hope to exhibit soon?
Yeah, I'm working on these sculptures, as I said, which I've been, again, working on since 2012, but then I put it on hold because I didn't know where I'm going.
Right.
But now I'm back. So I have four more to go, and... like 13 sculptures.
Do you know where you're going to exhibit them yet?
No.
So you got to finish them first and then shop them out.
Yeah. I need to. Yeah.
And then find a place that's interested in showing it.
I guess so. I'm not the most outward person.
Yeah.
So that sometimes troubles me. Like, no, I'm not like, hey guys, and I'm sometimes also still weird up with Facebook and. Trying to learn that. It's always been back and forth. It's so... Oh.
So the act of basically, I guess, bragging about your work to people and be interested in it and show it, is that a hard thing for you to do?
Yeah.
You're humble about it.
I guess so. Maybe if you want to call it like that, fine. You know,
well, what do you call
now,
it?
I don't call it anything. I'm maybe shy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just shy. But I gotta finish it first to see. I mean, I know what I want, but I always, you know, sometimes we say, oh, well, you have concept first and then you do it. And I say, well, how about I just start it? And I, to me, that's great about RU Connect, to start it, and you have right. something in there, and it, may, it doesn't come from nowhere.
Yeah.
But then you have to think about, okay, what is this, and what's the influence, and then you read on it, and like for number of states, I got this from this cute little book called The Downfall of Western Civilization, which was like, yeah, that's it, exactly, and it's more, you know, it's written in the future.
Yeah.
Very nice little sarcastic book by a scientist, and but it's a good read. So I'm working on that.
And the show at Alter Space, has that already done? Or
is it, yeah, it was last year.
It was just, how long did it go for?
Three months. No, a month. I'm sorry, a month.
Well, I always ask, I try to ask this of a lot of the artists that I interview, but what do you hope to see yourself 10 years from now?
Like, 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Like, do you see yourself being able to make a living off of your art, or is that even a goal of yours, or is there something else that you're interested in?
Well, I find these questions hard, because usually don't think in terms of decades.
Right.
You know, I don't even know if I'm still here. You know, you never know what happens. You
might. Right.
I just want to continue, and I think build on wherever I'm going.
Okay.
I think for me it's more a journey,
okay.
and I'd like to continue with photography, and maybe finding in photography a way where I'm more. I think I'll always switch between abstract and then doing maybe again. I'd be really interested in doing something documentary again.
Mm-hmm. So you just want to just keep exploring with what you can do with photography.
Yeah, but still observing my surrounding. And mm-hmm. then, doing some collages. Or,
mm-hmm.
And I'm doing this 28 by 28, which is starting in February. We're like, this is crazy. Well, so I definitely will do something hands-on.
Yeah.
More of those, like my mind maps, I guess.
So the idea of like having an art career doesn't cross your mind, really? The only concern
it does, but it's not what drives me.
Sure,
I mean, it's
not
the career. Well, I have to make the work. See, I had a full-time job, and I got so unsatisfied. My brain was exploding. So probably I will have a part-time job in 10 years again, or ideally I will teach Pilates
mm-hmm.
and do my art.
So work, working for a living is really more a means to an end. And for you, the end is really, you just want to keep making art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I get to a point, I'd love to have a gallery, but if I don't get a gallery, I won't kill myself.
Because you at least have your work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I'd love to continue showing, you know. And I think that's why I'm humble. I think, you know, whenever I show work anywhere, I only need one or two people to be really happy and to give them something or to enrich them in that, or, you know, give them any either fear or love, or a satisfaction, and that's great to me. Just reaching these one or two people.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on. I pretty appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I learned a lot about. I'm serious. I learned more about Eastern European and Western European culture that I don't think I've ever. I'm from Southern California, so this is new stuff for me. And Luta, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks to Elizabeth for coming on. If you want to see more of her work or learn more about her, be sure to visit her website at elizabethitai.com. Lastly, be sure to visit the Art Scene Podcast website to listen to past episodes of the show and see photos of my guests and their work. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at @ArtScenePC. All right, till next time.